Changelings. Season 1, episodes 1 and 2 are over, but we got y'all here on The Connect on Post Show Recaps. It's me, Chappelle, and I am back again to talk to you about yet another show, another Black prestige television show, and I am very excited to talk about this one. This is our first, foray into Apple TV, and this is very exciting because I didn't have Apple TV until yesterday when I decided to watch this show. So, that being said, I cannot do this alone. I need my trusty sidekick, the one who's actually in charge here, the one who could give us probably the most insight into what it's like to have a newborn baby ruining my sleep. It would be Mari. Mari, what's up?
Hi, Chappelle. I'm glad. I'm glad to be here to talk about something spooky made on Apple TV. A lot of this stuff, I was like, oh, it was like hitting home, but... I'm glad to be here and talk about something just very different than what we're used to.
Yes, this is very different. As we've discussed before, we're talking about The Changeling, Apple TV's new American horror fantasy television show. And this is created by Kelly Marcel and directed by Melina Matsoukas, who we've talked about in our preview podcast and we're big fans of, based on the novel of the same name by Victor Lavelle. And so this is going to be a fun watch. It just premiered and they dropped the first 3 episodes already on Apple TV Plus. So we have a lot to catch up on, but we're only going to talk about the first 2 episodes today. And then next time we record, we're going to do the next 2. And then from there, we should be doing 1 a week, as I suspect they will be releasing 1 a week from that point on. Is that correct, Mari?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And we wanted to break this down because we want to give some, like, we want to do some deep dive conversation on the stuff that we saw, and we can't possibly do that for episodes 1, 2, and 3 in a reasonable time frame. So we only watched episodes 1 and 2. It took everything in my being for me to not watch episode 3.
Oh yeah, same.
Yeah. And then next week we'll cover episodes 3 and 4 before we get on a regularly 1 episode schedule. So I'm very excited to get into it. But before we do, Chappelle, do you mind if I read a series of tweets from the author, Victor Lavelle, about how this show came to be?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I found this really interesting. Victor Lavelle, who also plays a key role in the show because he's actually the narrator of the show. He is... of course, on strike with the rest of the writers and the actors. Of course, we support unions here. So he can't do press, but he really wanted everybody to know how this came to be. As an author whose book was picked up for a TV option, he wanted to really give kudos to the show writer, Kelly Marcel. So I'm going to just read his tweets. It's a series of tweets. I think it's really, really important and says a lot about like how TV is made. So Victor Lavelle says, "The Changeling streams on Apple TV today. I'm proud of our big, bold fairy tale. With the WGA strike, I'm doing no press, but I've got to talk about the woman who made the show, Kelly Marcel. She fought so hard. I want to share the secrets of how she got it made at all." Okay. Yep. He says, "My novel, The Changeling, dropped in 2017. A smart producer, Allie Krug, falls in love with the story and options it for Annapurna Pictures. She gets the book in the hands of Kelly Marcel, a successful screenwriter." He says, "Look her up." And Kelly is in. Then Kelly does something strange. Kelly flies from LA to NYC and takes me to lunch at Dirty French. He includes a lot of details in here. Like, you could tell he's a writer. So that's why I want to read it word for word, because I think it's like spot on and amazing. But he says, she takes me to lunch at Dirty French, a spot in Soho. Here's why this is strange. Once most authors get their book optioned, they are booted out of the process. There's a check, big or small, and now kindly fuck off, you gremlin." That's exactly what he said. That is normally how writers are treated. And he said, "Kelly did the opposite. At lunch, she said, 'This isn't my show, it's our show.' The more we talked, the more I knew she meant it. We talked family history, the pain and the gifts that get passed down, the fairy tales we tell. Was there anything I had to have in the show? Like, she asked him, was there anything he had to have in the show? And he said, there was one thing. And he said, I said, keep the characters black.
Yes. This was,
yeah, I think that's very important. He said, this was 2017. Studios were still whitewashing all types of stories. My book was about a black couple, black parents in NYC, and it had to stay that way. She said, I promise I will never let that change. Now she had to pitch it to a studio. Kelly pitched all sorts of places. Afterwards, she'd call or email and let me know how it went, who was interested, who wasn't. There were a few choices. She picked a good channel. She was excited. I was too. Then it went into development. And he says, cue sad music. I won't say where we sold it, but our speeding train ran into an immovable object, an exec who didn't want to make the show. And they didn't say that, of course, but there were always new concerns, new problems, fix the old ones, and another arose. We were screwed, or so I thought. Kelly had been working on the project for years now, and she's not a person who just gives up. She pulled the show from them, took it elsewhere, and I didn't even know you could do that. That's what Victor LaValle said. He didn't even know that Kelly could just pull the show from somewhere, and I didn't know that either, so this was very interesting to me, but sorry, let me get back into it. But where would we go, and would we face the same problems again? Kelly brought the show to Apple. They embraced it, a grim, complex show that didn't hold the viewer's hands with an almost entirely black cast. Yes, they bet on that. They bet on her. Production began. My part in this process seemed done, but Kelly said, no, I have a job for you. My book option guaranteed me a credit as a co-executive producer on the show, which is good stuff, but Kelly wanted me on set to share my input with her, the cast, and the crew. With her support, I was bumped up to executive producer. As we shot in NYC, I was on set daily. It was a dream. After NYC, the production moved to Toronto for the summer to shoot for the rest of the season. Kelly encouraged me to come. My wife and I discussed, and our whole family moved to Toronto. I was on set every day all summer. Plus, I had one more job. The Changeling is all about storytelling. The myths we tell others, the ones we tell ourselves, the lies and the truths family passed down. Kelly's show is about storytelling, had a narrator telling the tale. Who better for that than a dude who wrote the book? And she asked if I wanted the job. If you watch this show, then you'll know I said yes. I'm your semi-humble narrator of the show. But as I hope this thread makes clear, the captain of the show, its champion, and the writer is Kelly Marcel. Kelly would never talk up all that she did to make this show a reality, and she's not on Twitter, so it falls to me. What I've laid out here is a fraction of what she did for this show and for me. She wanted to make something great. She did. Give it your full attention, and you'll see. So I know that was a very long thread, but I thought it was, like, it was very necessary to hear, like, just how that the TV process goes. And if you can imagine, this is what it's like for, like, black writers, black producers and stuff like that, and how hard it can get these stories onto the show, and how it takes, you know, somebody to really champion it. What do you think, Chappelle?
No, that's great. Especially when you don't even think about the idea that when your book is made, you need to basically explicitly say, I need these characters to be black, because it's a part of the vision of the story. You know, a lot of times black creators get a lot of, like, pushback when they try to take already, like, you know, stories that already exist, maybe like stories that have white characters or characters that are historically white. And then you say, oh, well, what if they were black? And then everybody's like, oh, why don't we have new stuff? Why don't we have new this, that, and the other? Well, we are always looking to find a carve our spaces in as creators. Whereas, you know, white people can just have white stories that they didn't have to explicitly be white for the story to make sense. Well, a lot of our stories as black people are tied to blackness, you know, and the idea that we come from a struggle or a similar background. So for me, it makes total sense that you would have to say this. It's just not something that was ever on my radar, that you would have to go in and plant your flag and say, my book was written about black people and it needs to be portrayed by black folk, because it won't make sense without it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we talked a little bit about Kelly Marcel on our preview podcast. She is a white woman writer, but and I think we said she was in charge of, I just want to make sure, she was in charge of writing Saving Mr. Banks, which I never saw, but I heard was really good. But I, like I said, I knew her for writing 50 Shades of Grey. But she seems to have a lot of good credits under her name. She also did Venom, both Venom movies, which is wow. Cruella, that like it's such a, that's such a broad scope of things, which is amazing. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't feel like she's pigeonholes herself. And hearing that story, I really appreciated that, hearing that that story from Victor.
Yeah, sans Saving Mr. Banks, though, I do think that generally these films that you did name have like a darker tone to them, right? Like,
yeah,
so
50
Shades of Grey, Venom, whatever the Venom sequel is. Yeah, and Cruella, even, you know, and Cruella, I love that movie. But I do think that they all are, you know, tonally very similar in that they're kind of dark, you know? Like I said, I never watched Saving Mr. Banks, but I guess I can check it out now for the sake of the research.
I'm trying to remember, was it the, it was the Mary Poppins story, I want to say?
Something about Disney, right?
Yeah,
something to that effect. But yes, all that to say, she seems to have a, like, niche, you know, maybe she's not pigeonholed into anything, but she does have a style, I guess I should say, from my point of view. And so we're going to see a lot of that kind of dark, maybe like a looming sinister air in The Changeling, which as I've said is American horror genre, but I don't know, there's a lot of story to be told in these first couple episodes, and it didn't necessarily feel like horror the entire time. Like, it felt like there was a looming presence of something bigger, Mari, but not exactly like I was not afraid while watching it, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And I'm also I don't mean to keep us on this, but IMDb's trivia says that Kelly Marcel actually didn't watch 50 Shades of Grey because it reminded her of how much her original screenplay was eventually changed by the novel's author E.L. James, and how the final script felt too much of a compromise for the screenwriter, which is, that is hilarious to me, like in a bad way, because E.L. James themselves is barely a writer. So I cannot imagine an actual writer optioning garbage, trying to make it good, and then the original author being like, no, I need this to be garbage, you know? Marcel said the difference between what she imagined and what eventually ended up on the screen was too big of a mountain for her to overcome. When she delivered her draft, James told her that she liked it, but the fans wouldn't because they wanted a faithful adaptation. For days, Marcel and James worked on it together until the novelist was happy with the result, which Marcel calls 50% hers and 50% James. That makes sense. And that kind of even makes me feel a lot better about Kelly Marcel. And can you imagine going through that process with E.L. James, but still being open to working so closely with Victor Lavelle? That's interesting.
Yeah, that's the wildest part. You know, a person you gave, you know, you tried to bring something to their novel, you know, for your screen adaptation, and then they got so far away from your vision that it didn't even feel great. And, you know, not to drag 50 Shades, but we can say it's not
the
great
worst.
As far as the movie.
It's so,
you know,
bad.
Yeah,
not the and that's what I was saying. The book is bad. The movie made it a little bit more palatable while also being pretty true to the book. So, I mean, like, I think Kelly Marcel like shined a turd into a, you know, whatever that saying is.
Into a diamond or something.
I'm an avid book reader. I love books. I read a lot. Erotic books, I read a lot of those as well. I remember, we are going on to a tangent, but when E.L. James dropped 50 Shades of Grey and a certain section of people thought it was like the craziest thing they had ever read in their entire life, I was like, so y'all don't know who Zane is?
So y'all never read Fly Girl in the shows.
Yeah. Black Butterfly, Eric Jerome Dickey. Like, what are we doing here? Anyways, this is not a book podcast. This is about The Changeling. I am very happy that we're going to be doing a lot of book to TV adaptations here on the fall schedule for The Connect, though.
Okay, yeah. And with that, yeah, that was a great introduction. Again, if you are new to The Connect, we're here to talk about the Blackity Black shows. You know, we're talking about Black authors, Black screenwriters, Black majority Black cast, you name it. We're going to try to have that coverage here. I do want to apologize for my service, though. You know, I can tell the video is kind of spotty. So if you're watching this, just listen to it. You know what I'm saying? But yeah. It'll be better next week. We're in a blender today. But in the meantime, please subscribe to Post Show Recaps wherever you get your podcasts. And you can subscribe to The Connect on Post Show Recaps on Apple Podcasts as well to get, you know, Connect exclusive coverage. And then, of course, if you're on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. Like I said, the internet's bad this time, but it'll get better, I promise. But that being said, we do need to take a quick break. And then after a word from our sponsors, you know, we'll come back and then we will talk about episodes 1 and 2 of The Changeling right after this. And we're back. So I was thinking that we could go play by play, but this is two long episodes of television. So let's hit the big picture. We have... This story is about a man named Apollo and his soon-to-be wife. Now, by the end of 2 episodes, his wife and baby mama, Emma. And this couple here, I'm trying to figure out how I feel about them because there's obviously a lot going on between Emma and Apollo. They are in a blender, to say the least, by the time episode 2 is over. But they do start off from a very, very interesting spot. Apollo, who is a book dealer who does not take no for an answer, and Emmy, who is working at the library, and she
at a library
and she does not seem interested in him at all. Very quickly, Mari, we realize that not taking no for an answer is just something that's in his blood. It's in his DNA. Mm-hmm. It's what his dad did to get his mom, and so you know, we're in an age where maybe take no for an answer, maybe try it. You know, so it already started off in a world where I was like, oh, is this gonna be bad? But I was pleasantly surprised with how it turned out, Mari. It seemed like they were going to have some really smooth sailing in the beginning of this.
Yes, I thought especially the first episode, the juxtaposition of Apollo and Emma's courtship to Apollo's parents, Brian and Lillian. Yeah, their courtship was very interesting. I loved how the first episode kind of wove their tales together. And when the author says you need to pay attention to the show, you need to pay attention to the show. Like, I was having a hard time trying to take notes and watch because it is definitely one of those shows where it's like, you feel like everything matters and you need to like be in it because it's definitely going to be like a mystery style, you know, what's going on type thing. So We get Apollo trying to woo Emma, and then we get the flashbacks of Brian, his dad, trying to woo his mom, and how it took like, what, oh my God, like 9 years for his dad to get his mom to finally go on a date with him. Yeah. You know, very different time than it for his mom and his dad. It took place over from like 1968 to 1977, and his dad was white and his mom was black. And so we're getting these flashbacks, and it's like an onion. Like, there's so many layers, you know what I'm saying? Because as we're getting the flashbacks to Apollo's parents and their courtship, we're then getting Apollo's mom having flashbacks to her upbringing, which I couldn't tell. Where did it seem like she was based from to you, Chappelle? Did it seem like an African country or maybe like maybe a Haitian Afro-Caribbean country? Could you tell? Did they say it?
No, they didn't say it, but you kind of get the vibe that it's from, you know, a predominantly Black country, because we do see her family is kind of, you know, taken, you know, not, I won't say hostage, but they were pulled over by some armed guards who were Black, Black militants. And so maybe a country that had been occupied or whatever the case may be. But Yeah, they, and then we see that her brother is murdered by them as well. So
yeah,
she grew up in a tough time in a country that is not this one, at the very least. And so we know that she is an immigrant, and that you know, that's probably going to play a large part of, you know, his upbringing as well. So yeah, it didn't say though which country it was specifically.
Yeah, and why she originally doesn't agree to go out with Brian, because she says she's like I don't date white men, you know.
Yeah.
But he wears her down, and they end up they end up getting married, I believe, right? Did we see them get married, or
I don't think we didn't see a marriage. We didn't see a marriage.
But they end up having they end up having Apollo. Again, why they named him Apollo? They said he's a god, you know. I guess like that's
Named him Apollo because they went and saw that movie on their first date. They went and saw Rocky versus Apollo Creed. And so you can't name a black baby Rocky, but you can name Apollo.
And then we just kind of find out that Apollo's that Brian, Apollo's dad, just disappears when he's four, and that Apollo is suffering from these like nightmares and stuff. And so, and these nightmares are also what is kind of not getting in the way, but it's you could tell it's something that comes in between him and Emma, because he's still trying to pursue Emma. Apollo's still trying to pursue Emma. She finally gives in, and then we have a very interesting first date. I know you said you don't want to go beat by beat, but I just really want to get your thoughts on their first date.
Yeah. Well, the first date was interesting because, you know, Apollo has been working his hardest to get Emma's attention. They go out. They seem to be clicking. And one of the first things he tells her is that, I really want to be a father. Like, he basically tells her, I want to get you pregnant, you know. On the first date.
Red flag number two already.
Red flag, big red flag. This man stalked you, and now he wants to get you pregnant today. But it really flags up that he says he wants to be a father. And then when you take that and look at his upbringing, knowing that since he was 4 years old, he hasn't had a dad in his life, then yeah, you would understand why he would want to be a good father, or why that would be one of his driving forces in life to say, okay, I'm going to be that person that I didn't have. And so it really does make sense. What did you think about the first date?
I thought the first date was really, like, I thought it was really weird in a way that, like, we were seeing Emma's personality for the first time, really. And I feel like Emma is a kooky kind of character, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's really out there, and we, in a good way, in a spiritual way. And we know that from her dropping a reference to Quilombo. I had to look this up. I love, don't you drop history lessons for me. I will pick them up. I will yum, yum, yum. I love that. We even got an opening scene. The very first opening scene is a ship in the water with the narrator talking about, you know, Black people trying to escape their circumstances and how they had some sort of ancestor or something looking over them. So, but I would say Emma brings up Quilombo, which I had to look up. It was a movie about like a Portuguese rebellion, like of Black slaves, and how they ran away. They were runaway slaves. They made like their own like kind of free colony in like the Portuguese mountains and stuff like that. And, you know, very like spiritual, like they felt like they were protected up there. It's almost like it's almost kind of like the plot to Encanto. But anyways, she talked about Quilombo, and the movie, I looked it up. The movie seems so interesting. You know, it's about Black resilience and resistance and stuff like that. And she talks about it in a way of like how she wants to connect with that like side of her and stuff like that. And this leads into her telling Apollo, like, I plan to go to Brazil. You know, and I don't know when I'm coming back. So you talking about this baby stuff, you talking about all this stuff, like, I'm not even going to be here, you know?
Yeah. And she says that's why she had been turning him down. I'm not coming back. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be here for a little bit. So, you know, there's no point in me going on a date. But of course, they keep dating because that's what people do. And then it's hard to say goodbye. They say their goodbyes. And then she goes to Brazil. And Mari, I'm not quite sure what all happened while she was away, because we see that she was warned by this family she was staying with in Salvador that, like, hey, don't go over to this, you know, river. And she's like, what? Or this lake, I'm sorry. And she's like, what? I'm gonna go anyway. So she goes, she comes up across like an older Black woman who is like, they told you not to come here, but you hard-headed. So here we are. And so she ends up getting a red string tied around her wrist, and it's like knotted three times. She gets three wishes. And we don't know what the wishes are in the first like moments of this, but she's also told that, you know, you're not to cut it off. Just let it fall off naturally. And that's when your wishes are going to come true. She ends up eventually coming home.
And not just your wishes. I'm sorry, Chappelle, but not just her wishes. Like, that's when you'll be happy or something like that, right? Doesn't she say something like your three wishes will come true and you'll be happy?
I don't know about the happy part. I don't remember.
Okay. But, I wasn't sure. Okay.
We can follow up. Okay. Yeah, we'll be here next week, you know. But yeah, so your three wishes will come true. And just don't cut it off. You know, let it fall off on, you know, its own. Well, she comes back, of course, immediately calls Apollo. They link back up, and she tells him this story.
Wait, and Chappelle, before you start, did she just want to ride from the airport?
She did. She needed a ride from the airport. But oh, they did seem like she really missed him and vice versa. And this poor man is whipped. He slept on the airport like benches waiting on her. And so they immediately go out back again. She's telling him about all her tales. She tells him about the wrist, you know, the little yarn, and he immediately cuts it off. She doesn't tell him he's not supposed to cut it off, but he does do it because he's Apollo. He is a god, and he's going to make everything good. And he says, hey, you don't need this little yarn, because I'm going to help your three wishes come true, and you'll be happy with me. And so, Mari, are you a very superstitious person? Like, could you have... if someone told you a story like this, would you have honored it initially, or would you have thought, okay, that's kind of weird?
I teeter, because I'm a very logical person. I'm a very practical person, but I'm also a spiritual person. I'm not a religious person. I'm a spiritual person. So, that was strike three for me. I'm like, how are you just gonna just cut this thing off after she told you this? Like, I was heated. I was mad. I wouldn't have cut it off. And maybe I'll talk about it in episode two, but this definitely made me think about some things for sure. I'll talk about it right here. So like, I interpreted it as, you know, her three wishes will come true and that she will be happy, you know? And to me, the string represented, and the lady told her, the witch told her, do not cut it off. Don't cut it off. And she did tell Apollo, she said, the lady told me not to cut it off. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe my husband James was like, she didn't put up much of a fight for him not to cut it off. But he still shouldn't have had the nerve to do that. I'm sorry. But it made me think of timing, you know, and how everything in life is about timing, and how in order for you to be happy, you almost need to be ready for happiness, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And to me, if we're saying that this red band is a substitute for happiness, and the lady says, let it fall off when it falls off. And once it falls off and it falls off by its own, you will get that. You will get all those three wishes. You will become happy. Cutting it here is forcing the happiness that when she might not be ready for it. You know what I'm saying? And this really struck me in episode two, once Emma is dealing with everything that she's going through from having their baby and, you know, post their wedding, you know, I'd be going to therapy. And so it felt like something there, you know, like something deeper there. Does that make sense? Am I making sense?
No, it definitely makes sense, especially because we see what happens after he cuts the ribbon off. But yeah, in the moment, I'm with James. I don't think she put a bunch of a fight. She didn't seem to be taking it that seriously. She was just like, right. Yeah, I haven't taken it off. And so when he cuts it off, I wasn't like, oh my God, why would you do that? I think I more was like that because I know this is, you know, that's probably something we should have took seriously because we're watching from the outside looking in. But, they seemed like it was pretty harmless. It wasn't like she was offended that he did it either. And he kept it because he's like, you know, I really wanted to be the one to, you know, to help make your dreams come true. So I kept this as a reminder. We will later on find out that two of her dreams did come true. Essentially, we find this out from unidentified second homegirl. Random homie is dying to tell him what's going on. She tells Apollo one time after they've been married and she is pregnant. She tells Apollo,
very pregnant.
Hey, yeah, she tells Apollo, listen, Emmy is very pregnant now, and both. You know, I think he calls her Emmy as a nickname. But Emmy is very, very pregnant now. And one of her wishes was that one, she would be happily married, you know, and two, she would have a healthy baby. And you have helped both of those dreams come true. But let me tell you about the third dream. Well, we actually don't figure out what the third wish is.
No.
We miss it completely. No. Yeah. And so, boom, Emmy is going into labor and she's going into labor on the subway train. And Mari, I just feel like, in a city like New York, if you are that pregnant and you're planning on having your birth at home, you should not be that far from the house. I really feel like you know that you want to have this birth at home. You want to have a natural birth. Someplace where you need to take public transportation in order to get to anywhere within 20, 30 minutes. It just doesn't feel like the move. Mari, am I being too hard on this woman?
No. It was dumb. I was like, between the homegirl talking in circles and I didn't understand what was going on, I was like, okay, girl, whatever. To them, like, she's going in contractions and he's like, well, I'm going to get an ambulance. She's like, I don't want to do it at the hospital. It's okay. I, as somebody who works in healthcare, I understand not wanting to give birth in hospitals and home births. I completely agree with all of that. But your only option being let's take the subway to get home while you're in active labor is dumb. They should have just took a few more minutes to try and get a taxi or call an Uber because you'd much rather want to have a baby in the back of a taxi or an Uber than in the dirtiest subway in the world. I'm sorry. That is like, I cannot imagine. Can you imagine being like another little mom and a little girl on that subway, on that train? Mom,
she could have told that girl to get up and move. They could have got up and moved to the other side. They really sat there. She covered that girl's face like she couldn't hear that woman giving birth. Also, you got these street performers on the subway. Mari, this is why people in New York be fed up. This is why they so angry because you just be minding your own business and then shenanigans happen. People on there, you've been at work all day. These people get on here dancing and playing music and then somebody want to have the nerve to give birth on the on the train? Nah, baby.
That's what I'm saying. I feel more bad for all the other passengers that had to deal with the street performer hip hop group and then the woman giving birth right next in the next seat. Oh, because the train stopped in the middle of the tunnel and they're like, boy, oh, the third rail's not working. Like, of all times, this was just too much. It was too much for me. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
Well, these labor pains are what end up, you know, obviously interrupting the whole story about the three wishes, because the best friend tells us one thing. She says Emma met a Norwegian photographer while she was out there and he left his camera. She sets the timer, walks into the shot, takes a nude photo of herself, and a gallery owner bought the photo and never took it down. The photo is of her looking into the camera like a sorceress. And that's the most information we get, that because the friend can't break her trust and tell him what the third dream is. But that's all we got. Mari, in two episodes, we don't get any more information about this Norwegian photographer, this gallery. This is all we have. Do you have any speculation about what this could possibly mean?
Like, no, I am like so confused. And I wish, and I really wish I could be like, yeah, I think it's this, this, and that. But I'm just like, I, like, silly me, my third wish would have been riches, you know?
Right. Like, yeah. Like a healthy baby and a wealthy
healthy baby.
Yeah.
And a, yes. And money. And it's like, not, I want this one picture of me to not be in a gallery half across the world, halfway across the world. So it's like, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm sorry, everybody. That's all I got. How about you? Well, any thoughts?
Well, that's the thing. My thing is not even what is the wish. It's more like she looked into the camera lens like a sorceress.
Sorceress, yeah.
What does sorceress be looking like? You know, like, yeah, mm-hmm. what they eyes be looking like if that's what they look like. You know, like, I need more information. We don't get a follow-up with the friend. We actually see the baby gets to be about 6 months old by the end of the second episode, and we mm-hmm. still have not followed up with said friend. I'm thinking, get this girl a call. She obviously knows something that y'all might need to know. And at first, maybe it doesn't seem that apparent, but in the next 6 months, Emmy is going to go through a transformation, and mm-hmm. she is not going to be the same person that she was at the time of going into labor and giving birth. She's right. actually going to go through what looks like at first glance, maybe like some, you know, postpartum depression, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, episode two opens up with Emma and her sister, and Emma clearly like looks like she hasn't been having sleep. She looks like she is in a very unnatural state, almost, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but she's like, I have an appointment, I gotta go, do you want to come with me? The sister is literally just, you know, following her like, what is, like, are you okay, what's going on? Emma basically ignores her. Well, she doesn't ignore her. She's saying stuff about the baby and how like he's not right and stuff like that, and then she goes to a door and is like, oh, so-and-so sent me. It was from a mommy group or something like that. And she's handed something and they're walking back. And then her sister's like, are these chains? And then all of a sudden it like jumps back. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, this is one of those things you really have to pay attention to, because this is the opening scene of episode two. I was confused as hell. I was like, what's going on? And then they jump backwards and then they come back to that later. So, episode two is a doozy. Like, it, between episode one and then episode two, like I said, it was so hard for me to not keep going and keep watching episode three, because it felt like a tonal shift, to say the least, here. And we found out more background on Emma and her family.
Yeah, we do. And before we get into episode two, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and discuss all of that right after this. Okay, so as Mari said, we get the background on Emma and her family. In the first episode, we really kind of focus on Apollo's upbringing, his dad, how his dad met his mom, how he was persistent, how he left, how he only came back one time. And that was when he was 12, when Apollo was 12 years old, he found a box of, you know, some of their belongings on his doorstep. And he knows that those came from his dad because his mom says, hey, those were your dad's things. And so that's all we get kind of from the Apollo story in episode one. So we use episode two to learn more about Emma and her background. And it does kind of take a turn. So we see Emma's memory, basically. And she remembers, just from stories of her sister talking to her, that you know, when she was younger, her parents both died in a fire. Mm-hmm. From her point of view, and we see these flashes, she had come back from school and saying the fire trucks at the house. We also see flashes of her mom combing her hair, but she doesn't have a lot of memories from her mom because I think she was like 5 years old when this happened. So she really doesn't like remember her parents that well, but she remembers the stories her sister tells her. By the end of the episode, when Emma is pretty much down and out, she's going through whatever this is that she's going through, whether it's postpartum depression or even something more sinister. Her sister finally tells her, you are so down bad that I need to alert you to, you know, what I think could be going on here. And she tells her this story about how the fire really happened. And what it turns out is that her mom, Emma's mom and her sister's mom, I can't think of her sister's name right now to come to me, but their mom's basically had a look like what looks like a maybe a psychotic break or something. Mm-hmm. And she was not doing well. She ended up burning down the house while the kids were asleep in the house. Their mm-hmm. dad was able to rescue them from the home. But then he turns around to go back inside the flaming building, presumably to get the mom. And he does not come out. And so Emma's memory of the situation is actually a kind of like has been planted in her head, basically, from her sister, who has been telling her, you know, no, this is what happened, when in reality, it was the sister who was getting her hair combed. And it wasn't Emma. And it wasn't that they had come back from school. They'd actually been removed and saved by their dad. And so all this to say, it looks like Emma has a little bit of her mom's DNA in her as well when it comes to maybe having those psychotic moments or moments of, you know, wanting to harm herself or, you know, or even wanting to harm her baby. So there's a lot to unpack in this episode. But yeah. Mari, again, you have been on that side of childbirth, a world that mm-hmm. I have not seen. And you probably have known the struggles of, you know, being a new mom. So were there any moments of this where you felt like this might just be normal struggles? Or did you feel like this might be a little bit more, like I said, sinister, or maybe something to deal with that, those three wishes in the first episode?
Right. And that's kind of the thing, right? Because I think this is a good representation of postpartum, like postpartum depression. I think it truly was the things that Emma's going through, like the mommy brain, the baby not latching correctly, like him biting her not getting a lot of sleep, her like looking like she's not keeping herself together, like she doesn't look like she like washes or you know what I'm saying, or eats a lot. She looks skinnier here. We don't necessarily know. You know, this all feels like normal postpartum depression. And for me, this whole episode, like second episode, like we know as viewers that this is supposed to be some sort of like horror fantasy based show. You know what I'm saying, right? Like, mm-hmm. But postpartum, how it's depicted and how it's felt is very real as well. And it was almost like we're using the vehicle of this horror fairy tale to show how some women can deal with postpartum in a sense, or how postpartum can feel to some women. And I really, this episode really got to me. Luckily, like when I gave birth, I did not experience postpartum depression. But as an anxious person, I was afraid I was gonna experience postpartum mm-hmm. depression, like a good portion of my pregnancy. Like that was one of my biggest fears. It was like, I gotta watch out. I gotta be very cognizant and vigilant and be very aware of how I'm feeling once this baby comes, to make sure that I'm monitoring if I do have postpartum or something like that, because that's kind of like half the battle, is really realizing what you're going through and then trying to treat it, as we see here with Emma. You know what I'm saying? Like she goes back and forth between accepting that it's postpartum versus then at one point calling her son the devil and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think this is kind of like the perfect vehicle for showing how maybe the extremes of postpartum are presented from the mother's standpoint that's going through it. Like I said, luckily for me, I didn't have to, but I know a lot of people who did. And I am a part of those mommy blogs and those mommy groups that talk about it and stuff like that. So it was really sad to see. It was like truly, truly so sad to see. And on top of it, and then on top of that, you're trying to also solve this mystery of this show. So I think that this was just a good vehicle to talk about generational trauma and postpartum and Black women having babies. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think this is just the vehicle they're using for it. And finding out that their mother basically has a psychotic break, sets the house on fire, tries to get the kids and everybody to die in the fire with her. And then like, she even held Emma at one point, and Emma's sister said, Emma looked at her dead in her eyes and said, "Let me go." And then, so another part of that is like, okay, are we coming back to the sorceress thing about her. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's just such enough, it's enough intrigue that we're still on the subject at hand. We're still trying to figure out what's going on in the context of the story. But also, I think people should, if this went over your head, you should be learning about postpartum and how it presents and what to look for and the signs that look for and some of the things that you can try and help. You know, Apollo was doing a really decent job of trying to help her, and then, you know, he snaps because, you know, he's under a lot of stress too, and I felt bad when they have that argument like at the end and stuff like that. But, you know, it really takes a lot of work. Like, that takes a lot of work. And one of my things as a mom, and I thought this was a great quote from the show, when the baby is born, the mother is too. And and then Emma also says she just wants to be the perfect mom. Like, there's no way. Nobody's perfect. You can never be the perfect mom. You could be the perfect mom and the perfect parent, and your child could still end up any way that they end up. You know what I'm saying? Like, we put too much pressure on ourselves for that. We put too much pressure on ourselves for having to have the baby latch and stuff like that, or breastfeeding versus formula and crap like that, or her having to go back when he's 2 months old to work and feel bad about leaving him. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have to go through all of that as mothers. And as another mother said to me, shortly after my baby was born, she said, do what's right for your child. That's it. Who gives a fuck about what all of these mommy groups say, what the books say, what, you know, definitely listen to your doctors, but, you know, like, do what's best for you and your baby. Like, you can have a whole plan about what this is going to look like, what you might think this is going to happen when the baby comes out, and it just goes south. Like, that I can definitely attest to. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just goes south. You just got to do everything that you can do that's good for you and your baby. And once that happens, you know, that's all you can do. Don't put too much pressure on it. And finally, before I stop talking, that whole conversation on them when her and Apollo went out on a date, and because they had his mom watch the baby. Typical mother-in-law shots being thrown and all that before they went out, and her being back to her kind of like, again, normal self, bubbly self. That was the conversation that made me think, I don't think she was ready to be happy. I don't think she was ready for this life, to have this husband, to be settled down, to have this kid. I think she might have needed more travels. I think she wanted to continue to go around the world. I think she wanted to continue being a librarian. And I think once he cut that wrist thing off, once he pressed his claim and all of that, and they move forward, and then she gets this postpartum, and then you start to doubt your surroundings and stuff like that, it made me think she was not ready for this happiness. She just wasn't.
Yeah, we see that the narrator was talking about how sleep deprivation will lead you to a state of, you know, like a catatonic state. I mean, hallucinations, and even it's been 6 months of sleep deprivation. So her and Apollo are both going through. But I do think that the postpartum depression here, it also serves as a distraction. You know, we know that something sinister might be happening. We know this is a horror story. We know that she has, you know, cut this thing off her wrist, and so that could be at play here. We heard about the story about the sorceress and the look on her eyes when she took the picture. We know all of that, and so I think that the postpartum is really serving as a good distraction from all of that too, because we have to determine if this is her being, if this is all a byproduct of, you know, what happened to her when she was in Brazil, when she was on her travels, when the little yarn got cut, or if this is just, you know, her going through as a new mom. And so I think that's pretty interesting, because she goes to the doctor and she's telling the doctor, you know, the baby bit me. And the doctor said, no, the baby didn't. The baby doesn't have teeth, you know. And we've heard stories about Black women just in general dealing with the medical community and not being believed. And so there's just so many layers to this woman going through all of this, because she's not being believed, but she probably shouldn't be believed, you know, because maybe it's all mental, you know, because she hasn't been sleeping. Maybe it's the postpartum, or maybe, you know, something is going on. There's a witchcraft or something, you know.
Yeah.
So there's so many layers we don't really know which one is happening all the time, but we do know that Mama has cracked. Okay. She is not the same lady that she was. She thinks the baby could be the devil. And you know, she has been getting these very cryptic messages from an unknown number. So to set that up, whenever Apollo takes the baby out, he likes to send the mom pictures, which is just common courtesy. If you're going to take this, take a kid away from their mom, send them pictures, please. Cause they be at home worried. And so, you know, they send in pictures, but then some of the photos are coming from what looks like a third party, right? So when Apollo takes pictures of him and the baby, these are selfies, but now some of these pictures are coming from across the street, from over his shoulder even, you know, and whenever she goes to show those pictures to someone, they always disappear. So Mari, at this point, I'm all in on this is something, you know, a little, there's something insidious happening, you know, this has nothing to do with the postpartum. That's a distraction. There's some, you know, there's some freaky stuff happening in the background, Mari. I don't know what to say.
Oh yeah, there definitely is. Between, like, I don't know if you noticed, but they have, especially, and you see this a lot in the first episode, but the show is shot, like, it's shot with a lens where everything on the edges is blurry and the center is very acute. I don't know if you noticed that. And it gives it this weird, it gives you an almost an uneasy feeling about, I don't know if I saw it as much in the second episode. It could be because Melina Matsoukas directed the first one. But then what I started noticing in the second episode, if you go back and look at the background, there will just, she was walking and people would be staring at her and the baby. That happened with Apollo as well. Like Apollo would just be like out with the baby, people in the background staring at him, staring at the baby. When she started losing it after going to the doctor's office and she's running, she's like basically fast walking down the street, cussing the baby out and cussing everybody else out. She passed this homeless man who starts yelling, "That is not a baby. That is not a baby. That is not a baby." And this is when she goes home and her and Apollo get into the fight and Apollo tells her she's the problem. Like, we're fine. You're the problem. Like, to me, that's when things were getting like really, really sinister and stuff like that.
Right. If you didn't think that the yarn thing had anything to do with this, I'd argue that you should probably rewatch the episodes just because, you know, like obviously this is kind of something like, you know, like I won't say supernatural, but you know, it's horror. So there's probably something to do with it. But there's a moment when they're on the subway train. And I don't know if you caught it, but she's giving birth and they look up and they see a sign on the subway wall, kind of like written almost like graffiti. And it says, "When you believe in things you don't understand and you suffer." Which is the lyrics, "The Superstition" by Stevie Wonder. I don't know if everybody caught that's just a nerdy Chappelle catch. But I was like, huh, wow. Okay, cool. You know, and that's in episode one, but episode two, we're knee deep in it. You know, Apollo is trying to do the good dad thing. He's taking the baby wherever, you know, giving her time away from the baby so that she can go back to work essentially. Cause they need, you know, the benefits of that. And he's out here doing his book dealing. And the entire time, you know, he seems to be having a pretty smooth, you know, transition into fatherhood aside from, you know, dealing with, you know, the stuff with Emmy, where she has having such a rough go that she even knows by the time she gets home, this crying baby, the moment she hands him to his dad, he's going to stop crying. And I was like, stuff like that will literally drive you crazy, Mari.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things. It's like, is this what she's perceiving through postpartum and actually happening, or this like the supernatural bent to it? And that's why I said like it feels like a lot of postpartum women like go through stuff like that where they just think like the baby won't stop crying, like I'm so lucky, like you. Exactly, they don't like you. I'm so lucky that JJ was a great baby. He slept. He was like, you know, as far as temperament goes, you know, we had a lot of struggles with him for like nutritionally wise, but like, it truly is one of those things where she's lucky she has Apollo as a crutch. But this would have been the point where I would have been like, y'all can't do this on your own. You can't do this by yourself, you know. And even though she was taking medication, it just, you know, by the end, this is where we're getting the narrator saying by 6 months, this is the final progression and stuff like that. And she just looks It's not good. Her sister said she told her that story about their mom because she had the same look in her eye before her mom torched the house. And I'm so scared. I wanted to see episode 3 because from what it looked like, they said episode 3 is where all the shit hits the fan. But we will definitely talk about that next week.
Yeah. And then as far as Apollo goes, there's just been some other small moments with him. Obviously, he's still doing his book dealing thing. We meet his friend, Uncle Patrice, who is going to be, I guess, some comedic timing here.
Yeah.
We see the two of them kind of are arguing amongst themselves. They make fun of each other. Uncle Patrice has PTSD from the military. And and so where
that
Apollo
actor
is, making fun of,
is really good. Who is that?
He's an everything.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm sorry,
so oh yeah, you completely that's Malcolm Barrett. So yeah, I've seen this man in everything that I've ever known in life. He's like, so he's good. Amazing. Yeah. And so Uncle Patrice and Apollo end up going out looking for books, and there is a moment where they go and they find, and they go to like an estate sale. In the estate sale, they find a whole bunch of books and stuff like that in a basement. And Apollo is given free reign to go down there because Uncle Patrice and his PTSD, that's not going to happen. He's not going in there to look around. He tells them, let's split everything you find in there 60-40, and they agree to it. But Apollo does find a signed copy of To Kill a Mockingbird that's signed to Capote. And this thing is going to be worth a bunch of money, at minimum 10K and probably a lot more. But then when Patrice asks about it, Apollo does not admit to finding that. He does not say, oh yeah, that's what I found. He's just kind of like, no, nothing was down there. And so I wonder if that's going to play into any of the drama moving forward as well. There's also another moment where they're looking for books, and this was actually pretty funny. This lady decided to interject her parenting advice. Mari, can we talk about the woman in the baby carrier?
This white lady comes up to Apollo and is like, that baby carrier isn't appropriate for that baby's age. With the way that it splays the baby's hips out, that could cause a hip dysplasia going forward. Now, she's right. That's true. And he said, oh, you know, thanks. How many do you have? And she said, oh, I don't have any kids. And he's like, well, let me know when you do, which is also true. You know what I'm saying? And Patrice, you know, basically tells her to fuck off, which is very funny. But I'm like, why? Why did you have to open your mouth? Why did you think you had the authority to tell this man? It's true. Some of those baby characters can cause that type of hip dysplasia when you put kids who are too young in it. I get that. You know what I'm saying? But am I going to go up to a parent and tell them that? No, I am not. No. Because more than likely, they are doing that because that is helping their baby. You know what I'm saying? If it's something that is really detrimental to their baby's health, I'm pretty sure their doctor will let them know. But I could not. Could I believe the audacity?
Yeah,
I could.
You could. You could. Look, I've been working in education for 10 years. I have taught children of all ages. And a parent will look me in the eye in a heartbeat and say, you don't know what you talk about because you are not a parent. And I let them have it every time. I was like, honestly, you right. I might not be able to tell you how to parent, but I can tell you what's not working here at school. I will never push back. Yeah, you are right. I don't have kids. Good luck. You know, more power to you. I do what you got to do. But that was very funny. And it was just another one of those like moments of levity where, you know, it's kind of just bringing us back to, you know, we can be in this horror genre, but we don't have to feel like at every turn there's going to be a jump scare. But I will say that there were a few spooky moments, even Apollo's dreams. You know, there was a lot of like him running bathwater as a child and smoke appearing and then his dad showing up and his dad actually saying, I'm taking you with me. You're coming with me, and then taking him somewhere. And so we know Apollo never sees his dad again. His dad came again when he was 12, but he didn't actually see him. He just found the box. But they keep showing this same exact dream where his dad says, come with me. You're coming with me. I'm taking you with me. Do we have any insight into what that could be? Do you think that's more of a dream, or is that actually something that may have happened and he's just remembering it as a dream, Mari?
Oh, that's a good point. That could be it. To me, it was very much giving, like, is his dad like trapped in another dimension type thing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I made reference to the show, The Shining Girls, on our preview podcast. And it, mm-hmm. like, I see why they took this to Apple TV, because Apple TV loves that weird, loves this weirdness. So I took it as, okay, I think his dad might have been messing with forces he didn't understand and may have gotten trapped somewhere and has been trying to reach out to him, like, on from the other side of wherever he's at. You know what I'm saying? But your thought of maybe this is like a recessed memory that's kind of being accessed differently, could that sounds like a good shout as well.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because I start to wonder if there's any overlap in the two stories. You know, we know that his dad, you know, he never sees his dad again, and his dad is obviously speaking to him through these dreams. Mm-hmm. But then on the other end, you have Emmy, who's getting these, you know, cryptic random pictures, you know, of her kid, mm-hmm. and, you know, her husband out and about. And one of the final pictures that he sees, I mean, that she gets, it says "got him" in all caps. And yeah. I'm thinking, are these two things related? Is this something completely different? Do Apollo's, you know, dreams and memories even mean anything? Or is this all stuff that has to deal with the three wishes that, you know, he may or may not have destroyed by cutting that little piece of yarn off? Because I believe, what were the three stages of the yarn? I think she said now, after, and the beyond.
Now, after, and the beyond. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I'm wondering if this is the beyond portion of the story, you know?
Yeah. Yo, this is going to be crazy. Like, this is going to be a wild ride.
It's going to be wild. And I'm already worried. I'm very concerned.
Me too. I'm scared.
I mean, the most we see as far as like solutions to Emmy's problem is that she does go to that house again. We see it at the beginning and we see it at the end of the episode. She does go to that house and get those chains. We don't know what those chains are for. Mm-hmm. We get several flashes of what looks like Apollo and potentially Emmy getting tortured. I don't know if you caught those two, where they look like they're being like, they're getting like lashes or something like that. They're up against the window, and I cannot tell what's happening. I can't tell what's a dream, what's not a dream, why the dad is wearing like this blue mask in some of the dreams.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much to unpack here, but the episode ends with, I guess the question is who has disturbed this house? Or it says the house god, it's the baby that has disturbed you. Call the baby now, says the house god, and now she's busting in, and it looks to be on a mission. Like, this is where Emmy ends up, like, kind of coming in from being wherever she was at, and she has a plan, but we don't know what the plan is. All we know is that this woman went and got some chains. the baby's not doing well, you know, with her. Lakeith is sick of her. Apollo is sick of it, you know. And so I'm kind of questioning, in episode 3, is this the break? Is this the end of Emmy's sanity? Or are we going to actually get something to help with this woman's trauma? Because honestly, Mari, I don't think she's long for this series. I'm starting to think that she might end up in the beyond as well.
Yeah, me too. I'm a little scared for her. And then I also feel like this is like changeling, a definition for a changeling in itself. Let me just bring it up here. A child believed to have been secretly substituted by fairies for the parent's real child in infancy. So I wonder if, you know, that might be like a little clue, like the title might be a little clue into what Emma thinks is happening.
Well, they do. So yeah, we see Emma say that that's not her baby, you know, like, that is not like that. That is a baby, but that is not her baby, you know? And we see that I think there is some fairy lore brought into this.
With that book, right? With the book that his dad left for him, I want to say.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that his favorite book, I guess, that his dad left for him. One of the like tales in there is like about a baby, right? And it says a baby is a dream mm-hmm. made real, but dreams are a fairy's favorite meal. And so, knowing the definition of the changeling or a changeling, and knowing that it has to deal with fairies, I think that this is probably where we're gonna find, you know, what's going on here. It's in this book, because. In the waters in the wild, that story repeats. Throughout this last two episodes, we keep hearing about the waters in the wild. We know that's his book that his dad left him. We know that she doesn't think this baby is hers. She said it's something in his eyes. And if a baby's dream made real is, you know, in our fairy's favorite meal, then maybe all that stuff overlaps. And so I think that's probably what we're going to end up discussing in the episodes moving forward. But for the most part, Mari, that pretty much covers it. I mean, we talked about the big plot points here. We didn't really get into a lot of the actor work here, but obviously we talked about that on our preview that we got some big heavy hitters here on The Changeling with people like you mentioned, Malcolm Barrett, but, you know, obviously Lakeith Stanfield, the Adina Porter as his mom, and and then Clark Bacco as Emmy. So we got a lot going on, Mari. Overall, what did you think? Big picture, first two episodes, we're on the go. What's up? What do you think about The Changeling so far?
Big picture, I'm very glad we're covering it. I am like on the edge of my seat. I can't wait to see that where this goes. If this leads to fairies, man, Black people love fairies. So this is going to be
interesting. Fairies.
We love some fairies. So, I'm excited. I'm excited to dive deep into the rest of the series. And I'm just so glad that we have Black stories on television like this, you know? How about you?
Yes. Oh, very excited to talk about it. This, I don't get to talk about stuff like this often. I'm more of a, I talk about goofy television a lot.
Yeah.
So this seems like a lot more, like I get to sink my teeth into this a little bit. And so I'm very excited as well. And we're very excited to have you here on the Connect on Post Show Recaps. And so if you have any feedback about our recap of the episode, anything we missed, anything you really think is important, then please chime in. Feel free to leave us some comments here in the YouTube. Tweet us at Mari Talks Too Much with the number 2 or at Chappelle's_show on Twitter, or just tweet at Post Show Recaps and we will see your feedback for The Changeling. You can also email us at connect@postshowrecaps.com. You know, if you have any feedback and you want us to read it here on the air or discuss it on these next couple episodes when they are released. And then, you know, of course, tune into more coverage here on The Connect as we will be covering more Black shows, more Black content, more Black creators. And we've already released, as you might have known, our preview podcast where we talked about some of the stuff going coming up. So, of course, we have The Changeling, but we also have The Other Black Girl, which will be hosted by Mari and her co-host Asia. And then potentially LaTanya if she's able to come back. And then Mari, LaTanya, and myself will be talking about Rap Shit on HBO when it is revealed, released on November 9th. And so check out all of that and more here on The Connect on Post Show Recaps. Remember to subscribe to Post Show Recaps wherever you get your podcasts, or subscribe to The Connect on Post Show Recaps on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. We also have a Patreon. So if you want to support us in our work, signing up makes it possible for us to bring you these podcasts each week. So if you're a fan of the We Got Y'all crew here on The Connect and want more coverage of shows like Rap Shit, like The Changeling, and like The Other Black Girl, consider signing up at any level. And when you do, you get some very special patron perks, including our Discord channel where we have our discussions about this show. So feel some kind of way about this week's episode? Well, there's a ton of people happy to discuss your likes and dislikes on our Patreon Discord. That's patreon.com/postshowrecaps. So support Post Show Recaps and its podcasters, especially us here on The Connect. Mari, anything else before we wrap it up?
No, just make sure you're following and subscribed so you can listen to all of our stuff, you know? please support. That's all that we really ask, honestly. Definitely check us out over on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much, because, you know, that's where we'll be dropping the rest of our podcast schedule. For me, I will be on the Rob Has a Podcast Network talking about true crime on the Crime Scene Podcast with my co-host, Sarah Carradine. Me and Sarah Carradine host a true crime review podcast where we watch true crime documentaries and docuseries, and we review them and tell you if you should watch them as well. So if you're interested in that and you're interested in true crime, you can go and you can subscribe to Crime Scene by going to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. That way you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Crime Scene Podcast as well. Anything from you, Chappelle?
I'm still hosting the Nothing But Netflix podcast on Rob Has a Podcast with Rob Cesternino. Every week we talk about a different Netflix show. I also was on Rob and Akiva Needs a Podcast this week, complaining about stuff. And so if you're a Renap listener or a fan of Rob and Akiva Needs a Podcast, check that out. I'll be on there guesting with Alexander Chester as well. If you are a fan of Big Brother, Mari and I both tackled some Big Brother coverage this past week to talk about the last week in Big Brother 25. Right? We're in 25? Yeah. Big Brother 25. And so check that out. We got some Survivor coverage coming on Rob Has a Podcast. And so if you go to robhasawebsite.com to keep up with all of that as well. And then here on Post Show Recaps, I'm still talking about The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon is back. So check that out. We're going to do weekly drops of that podcast to cover the 6-episode run of The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon. And then finally, Sasha and I are on Rob Has a Podcast talking about Below Deck every week. I think we have 2 more podcasts for the final 3 episodes of Below Deck Down Under. Our special guest next week will be Sharon Tharp. So check that out. And then, of course, follow me on Twitter at Chappelle's_show. To, you know, keep up with everything else I'm doing. Last week, we spotlighted a small black business called RVL Wellness Co. And their website, rvlwellnessco.com, has a promo code for our Post Show Recaps Connect listeners. So if you go and use PSR Connect 15, you can purchase some of the therapeutic puzzles that they have that uplift women of color. And, you know, I think that if you use that Connect code or whatever, one, it helps support this business, but also you can get a discount as well. So do that. Check us out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, send us feedback, leave us 5-star reviews, and then tune in next week as we cover episodes 3 and 4 of The Connect on Post Show Recaps, talking about the changeling. Until then, we will see you all next time. Bye.